Hi there, you're listening to the LLB podcast, the podcast for law students and young lawyers. My name is Johnny Nguyen and I'll be your host today. Welcome to episode 13 of the podcast. Today we'll be talking about policy work in the Australian government. Some key concepts we'll cover today include how is policy developed, what tools can be used to action policy, and what are the major trends happening across policy work right now? Please enjoy.
Hi everyone. Today we're going to be talking about all things public sector and in particular policy work within government. So one of the big things about the public sector is that we have a lot of people working in the public sector. I think just over 200,000 in Australia in the APS. And so it's a big employer and a big career opportunity for university students looking to get into the professional workforce. In looking at that, today's discussion will introduce some basic concepts, some intermediate concepts, and some more advanced concepts for your consideration. The basic ones revolving around what exactly is this public sector policy work and public sector work generally. The intermediate concepts revolving around what sort of work people do within these spheres and what it looks like on a practical basis. And the advanced concept, we'll look at some trends in public sector work and policy work generally. To sort of get into our guest today, I've got Bethany Rollins here with me today. And Bethany and I used to go to uni together at Western Sydney University. We met doing some competitions in law school, but I'll throw it to Bethany to introduce herself with the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Throw it to you.
Excellent. So my name is Bethany Rollins. I'm a policy officer inside the APS. So I started in 2017 at the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet in their graduate program. I've since moved on to work in the Attorney General's Department. And I did a short stint at the Australian Public Service Commission in 2020.
Awesome. So let's kick off with some basic concepts here. So what we're looking to get an understanding of here is we have a lot of early stage university students who might not know what public sector work actually entails. Can you give us a brief overview of, I guess, the nature of work in the public sector and what sort of pieces fall into place here?
Yeah. So I think this is something that not just university students struggle with. Mm. I think everybody struggles with it. I remember when I first started my job at PMNC, so Prime Minister and Cabinet, my parents, they're a classic government thing. But I started there and I had to really try and think about how to explain to my friends and family what exactly my job was. And distilled down as to something as simple as it can be, government effectively taxes its citizens so that it has the options to improve its own citizens' lives. Policy work is looking at how it can use that money and its ability in government to pass legislation or to fund certain things to bring about the country or the nation that we want. So my job as a policy officer is to be looking at how we can continue to improve the lives of citizens with that funding and with our ability to pass legislation.
Sure. And I know you mentioned that you work in policy, but I also understand that there are other aspects of, I suppose, the entire government behemoth here. What are the other areas of work that also happen here? Just a quick overview.
So I think it can be kind of cut into about three categories broadly. So we've got policy work, which is specifically about, blue sky thinking. How are we going to try to change people's lives? How can we negotiate or work with stakeholders to kind of get this change that we're looking for? Then there's program management, which is really specifically about how we've got money to effectively spend or give to certain groups of people for the change that they're looking for.
And so you're often the implementation of those.
Exactly, yeah, the implementation of the policy work. So we've decided what the policy should be, how we're going to change it. We've got maybe some money we want to spend somewhere. So we're going to go and deliver that money either through procurements or grants or anything like that.
To jump in here, is that something along the lines of, say, policy work would be looking at, say, access to justice generally, and pursuing that goal of making justice more accessible, but then program management is then actually giving money to things like legal aid or community legal fences.
Exactly.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, obviously we've made a policy decision that we fundamentally want people to be able to have like representation when they're from low socioeconomic backgrounds or they're struggling to be able to pay for an independent solicitor. The implementation of it is really specifically going to be how do we fund the legal aid commissions or the community legal centres so that those people can get that support that they need. And so as government officials, you would be sitting there trying to work with those providers to make sure that they're spending the money right, to make sure that the money is going into the hands of where it's most needed. So I guess an example of that is how important like funding the addressing of family violence is now, specifically for legal aid commissions, for instance. So we want people to be having their family violence matters addressed. And so you carve out certain amounts of money that specifically need to go to supporting people or helping those people experiencing family violence. So that's a big government initiative or desire. Sure. And then I guess a third category is case management. So, you know, we do have like legal arms within the government that look at certain cases that you're trying to figure out. But I think the more almost easiest kind of example of case management is like the visa system, for instance. So like looking and reviewing at independent applications that for certain things that the government has the right to decide, the ability to have a visa to come to Australia or to work here and things like that.
Sure, for individual processes that decisions need to be made on an individual level.
Yes. Yeah. So once we've set up this whole idea of, you know, we want to allow people to be able to come to Australia and work here, for instance, from other nations, you know, you've got that case management process there where you've got to actually decide who those people are, whether they're going to be able to come, whether, you know, all the considerations that kind of factor into those decisions based on the policy outcomes and goals. So it's really a distilling down almost of from the blue sky thinking to the actual implementation for individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned that you work in that policy space then, and you're a policy officer at the Attorney General's Department. Can you run us through what that process is for distilling, you know, this blue sky thinking into an actual proposal that can be put forward? What does policy development look like in practice?
Yeah. So I think you regularly get taught you get taught the policy cycle in school if you do come across it. And it's broadly, you know, kind of very aspirational and very set way of going through the policy side. Like, you know, you come up with the idea, you work with stakeholders, you implement it, then you evaluate and go back over it again. My job in the policy space is to do a lot of that initial policy cycle bit. So most of it really is dependent on every like topic, what you're trying to do and how you want to deliver on it or what you think the issue might be. But you'll have good relationships with stakeholders. They might, for instance, notify you of a particular issue that you think, oh, we should probably address this. We have the ability and capability of doing that. So you work with those stakeholders. You gather more information about what it is that's happening. You're negotiating with stakeholders. If we think that they need to maybe be doing something different, you're trying to use your like leverage to encourage them to change some of their behaviors or alternatively, if they're saying this is something that we need, you know, change legislation-wise, or, you know, there might be funding avenues that they need to access so that they can make this change, you start working with them on what that kind of actually looks like. I think, yeah, I'm trying to think, maybe in the legislation space, for instance, if you're trying to do legislation reform from that policy angle, you'd be really looking at, you know, is this going to work practically when it comes down to it? So if we're making this change to the legislation, is it going to be understood well? Do we have, you know, the constitutional powers to change it? Are our stakeholders that are going to have to actually like action this legislation, is it going to make sense to them or is it going to cause more problems? Will it actually deal with the issues? So there's all those considerations and a lot of it is really working deeply with the people that it's likely to affect.
Right. And that's what we talk about, this idea of consultation, like this public consultation where you really are getting that understanding of the people who are most likely to be practically affected by the policy. You're trying to get them involved in it to make it a co-design process.
Absolutely. Co-design is one of those, it's definitely where you want to be moving to and achieving so that you're more likely to have your policy ultimately be successful if you've worked with the people that it's going to be affecting. So you want them to be able to tell you based on their experience, and they've got so much experience. Public consultation is so helpful. What exactly this is going to do that's going to help them or where it's going to go wrong.
Sure. Well, I mean, like, distilling all that back, I think the version of policy development that I was briefly taught at PMNC was a lot cleaner than what we see in practice, you know, like what you've described generally, right? I think it's that we identify a problem, and that's usually that stakeholders have notified us about something going wrong that needs to be changed. We brainstorm a couple of solutions, and then we consult with them, and everyone's somehow happy, and we move forward and implement, etc., right?
Yeah.
But I think the reality is, in that little first 3 steps of identifying the problem, brainstorming solutions, and consulting with stakeholders, there's probably a lot of iterative process happening, right? You identify the problem, you eventually consult, and you realize you've got the wrong problem, you go back to the drawing board, and there's a lot of back and forth before you eventually end up implementing.
Yeah. If you think of the policy cycle as a big, you know, actual circle,
you keep
right?
going around.
There's a point where you're going from here to here, but backwards, almost back and forward, until you're finally able to get that agreement from everybody, or you feel at least comfortable being able to take the next step, which is really getting like the approval. Like you want to be ensuring that everyone is now happy with it, and we've got the money to move forward with that idea, and we're going to be able to actually implement it.
Okay. So I think that covers off our basic concepts. I hope that gives you a good idea of what policy looks like at a broad level and what the public sector looks like. Let's delve into a little bit of, I suppose, intermediate content. What I'm curious about is, in this cycle of policy development here, we sort of saw how there was a lot of, I suppose, negotiation happening between stakeholders and policy officers, according to government, in what needs to happen. As a law student, at least, up until this point, I've always thought about policy work as basically just proposing new legislation or, you know, giving delegated authority for regulations to be made. It sounds like there's a lot more going on here, though. So what are the other things that are in your toolkit that you can use to shape policy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, I'll quickly make a point about that that idea of legislation being the key driver. It is something that I think a lot of people come to this space, particularly with a legal background, because there's such an awareness of how important the law is and its desire to comply with it. So people just naturally assume everyone's kind of going to want to do that. Our respect of the law is very high. And so as somebody that tries to design legislation, which I've been involved with before, you want to assume that everyone is just going to get it and do it, right? But that's not necessarily correct. People are regularly going to not understand the law, or they're not going to be aware of it and they're not reading it. So there's so much more to policy than actually just, we've changed the law, so everyone's going to comply with it. It's all good.
To jump on that as well, though, I think one of the things I thought wasn't quite well known was that the government's actively also pursuing a deregulation agenda. So in the work that I currently do with the Office of Best Practice Regulation, one of the things that comes up quite frequently is this idea that hard touch, or, like, you know, actual prohibitive legislation should probably be one of the last things you consider, because often it will have quite a negative and that red tape impact on businesses and individuals. So
yeah.
Oddly enough, policy work at the current state should involve using legislation as a last resort rather than the first means, which yeah. As a law student, that's my go-to, like, legislate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that comes back to your, like, question about what are the other tools that you can use. If legislation's the last one, what are the first ones, right? And so a lot of the time for government, it's really about working with those stakeholders in, like, a collaborative way to see what can be done about it. So I say, you know, they might say, we can't change anything about it because we need to do this thing based on our legislation, so we've got to change it.
Mm-hmm.
But they might also say something along the lines of, well, it just seems like this might be a better idea to do it this way. Is there a way of changing the process? And so you might want to set up a group where you can bring all the other similar stakeholders into it and go, this might be the best practice idea for how to regulate this. So there's a lot of opportunities in that way to really influence the directionality of how stakeholders are doing their jobs.
Yep.
So I think some good examples of what the Australian government's kind of been doing with COVID, effectively, right? So there's not really been, you're not hearing necessarily about the legislation of what government has been doing to deal with COVID, right? You're hearing about how we're trying to encourage people to feel comfortable and safe actually accessing a vaccine when it arrives. We're talking, like, having big campaigns about trying to address and notify people about where COVID is within states and territories and things. Federal government's working very closely with states and territories to actually ensure that we've got like a consistent view on how we're going to address things. We like effectively made a policy about, you know, closing borders so that we would be able to avoid COVID coming in. Those are kind of the different types of measures that government can do that ultimately are policy shifting that aren't exclusively legislation.
Sure, and I think we can see a lot of debate happening in the public discourse about, I suppose, the carrot and sticks that are happening in this sort of thing. I think a lot of people are raising concerns about things along the lines of, if I don't get a vaccine and my employer says I have to, what then? Or what happens if I can't access international travel because I have a vaccine or I have not had a vaccine, etc. And a lot of these things are hard touch, but at the same time, we see things like even the COVID tracing app or like the app that gives you information about the latest statistics, etc. It looks like all of these are all for policy responses, but they're not necessarily regulation or legislation per se.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think a lot of the time we offer a good thing to touch on is the fact that you've mentioned a lot about funding before. I think we also see, again, the carrot approach in terms of, say, departments like the Department of Industry, Science, something and something, DISA, because we use acronyms, right?
Names changed quite a lot.
Yeah, all the departments do. And so, like, we know that's basically the one about, like, industry and innovation. And they use a lot of grants to help startups and essentially anything that develops innovation within industry and scientific development more generally. And we see that policy proposals are probably being pushed through to get more funding towards certain things that we value as a nation.
Yeah. I mean, coming back to like the policy cycle, obviously there's been a decision made that we want to be a bit more of like an innovation nation where we're pushing people to do like certain types of new work and develop new skills. So the grants are there to supplement that broader policy goal to push forward with actually ensuring these people have the money to do that, are bringing the capabilities in and are going to be ultimately like changing the way that our country works.
Sure. And I was just laughing at the ridiculousness of, say, the stick approach there. Like, imagine if we started legislating. You can't be outdated. You have to be innovative. Section 1 of the Innovation Act says that all those who are not innovative will be subject to this penalty.
Imagine how horrific that would be. You're sitting there like, what is the definition of innovation suddenly? Like, so obviously you don't want to, you can't go in that direction with it. You've really got to try and tap into the skills you've already got and incentivize people to go and start learning new things.
Mm.
You know, as we want to, I don't know, we created the Australian Space Agency effectively a couple of years ago. We want to start bringing more people into Australia or bring more skills, I should say, who are going to be able to actually like support our space innovation. So how do you do that? You can't say everyone's got to get good at space.
Sure. I think that's a pretty good segue into, I guess, our advanced topic section there. So I want to leave this a little open to you, but are there any trends in, I suppose, the public sector / government / policy work here that are emerging as a result of changes in the political, technological, whatever landscape that we're looking at? And how does that sort of affect the work that government's doing, I suppose, the policy development life cycle that we have talked about so far?
Yeah, I think that the major one ultimately is that we want to start getting more and more targeted with how we support people. So the way to do that, though, is a greater need to collect data, so big data, and bringing a lot more of our like knowledge about how people work into the fray so that we can make better and better policy. So we talk about, obviously, blue sky thinking and then distilling that back, but the people in that case management role have very unique experiences or knowledge about what it is that could be changing policy space. Same with program management, because they're the ones with the stakeholder relationships that the, you know, I'm giving you cash to do this. So you want to be able to continue having this feedback loop in. And one of the things that we're identifying across the board is greater need to gather data that tells us how things are working so that we can make better and better policy that's more and more targeted to individuals. So we're really pushing to have more data connectivity across departments. Like, data is an asset, and I think for a little while we've not necessarily thought of it as an asset. It's a bit scary if you're coming in with a bit more of a generalist background and you've got to figure out how to do data analytics. It's it's quite scary. Knowing what data to collect and how that might actually be influential is still something that we're trying to figure out. So I think there's a really big push for us to try and like reshape our thinking about what data is and bring it more into the policy development space, particularly like the broader initial thinking.
Sure. Well, I mean, hard-hitting journalism here. Obvious question here is that we've got seeing this trend across, I think, both the public and private sector of moving towards gathering and analyzing data better. But at the same time, I think we're also seeing a wider public / consumer resistance to gathering more data. There's concerns about privacy, mismanagement of data. I think like Cambridge Analytica has literally entered our vocabulary as data mismanagement.
Yes.
So are there ways that government is addressing and getting this buy-in for this expanded data capacity that they're trying to get?
I think that the way government is trying to do it is, like, we already have a lot of data holdings, and so it's really about developing trust in our ability to use them appropriately. And so that might involve then kind of regulating ourselves in the way that we use data. So we try to be very careful about how exactly we use data and whether that's going to be appropriate uses of the data. There's a lot of privacy considerations to think about here because you don't want to be releasing data or sharing data where people are identifiable. And, you know, the more we get better at doing that, the more we demonstrate with trust that we're capable of doing that, the more I think communities will trust you. So there's a little bit of give and take on that.
Yeah, sure.
And I think part of that is actually going, this is how we're intending to look after your data. This is how we're going to be moderating it and making sure that it's safe and not going to be accidentally released, or that you're going to have perverse outcomes having, you know, given your data to us and, you know, you've been burned by it or had bad issues with it.
Sure, makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess we'll cut like the hard-hitting journalism there. Let's look at some things that might help any listeners that haven't listened to this are like super keen on like public sector / policy work. And so if they're thinking of applying, right, let's shed some light on some of the things that might help them do that. So first off, bit of a soft-hitting question here, but what do you enjoy about working in the public sector? Like, why have you been attracted to working in the roles that you have been working?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a bit trite, but I wanted to help people. I mean, I did a law degree and I did a psychology degree at Western Sydney University. And both of those were really driven by my desire to like help people. But I realized like if I put it in the policy kind of configuration that I was talking about earlier, that was all really case management type stuff. I was going to support individuals at a really small level. I was going to intensively do that with them, but I realized that I wanted to do more of the blue sky thinking stuff. And that's what I get to do here in government. So I can change a number of people's lives, hopefully for the better, in a way that is more impactful, I think, than what I was getting out of doing like the legal work and the psychology work. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the direct comparison we're making here is you could have gone into, say, legal aid and helped individual people along the way, or you could be in a position to assist how legal aid and access to justice initiatives are more shaped generally.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
You were very much interested in that aspect of wide scale impact.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think that's what I really love about government is that I've got this opportunity to different degrees actually impact people's lives in a really positive way. I've been so lucky to have gotten to work in a lot of different areas in government where I've been doing amazing things to support, in particular, people experiencing family violence, women's policy broadly, and Indigenous Australia. I've gotten to do a number of things in those spaces, and those are all like issues that I deeply care about. So my opportunities to support people through those policy lenses has been just enormous, and I couldn't have had the scale of impact that I would have wanted from doing it from this like small little, you know, your singular legal case issue is here, and I've got to just hope that they find all the other supports that they need across the board.
Sure. I mean, devil's advocate here. I think case management is underrated in the sense that even those individual cases usually set precedents and have ripple effects along the way.
Yeah.
To some extent, I think we do underestimate that when we're thinking, but I think it's hard to quantify reliably what sort of impact you have either way, because in a sense, policy work can fall short and case work can also have massive ripple effects. But I'm going to have a significantly less meaningful answer. If you call it trite, I call it meaningful. But one thing I've enjoyed about working in the public sector is the opportunity to get very varied experience. And look, that's a bit of a buzzword, but to give you a really good example of that, I know that in the team that I'm currently working in, I'm at PMC, Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, within the Office of Best Practice Regulation. Quite a mouthful, but I understand that a couple of members of my team have been deployed off to work in different COVID vaccine task forces. And, you know, they're basically very similar to the comments you get elsewhere, but they're very much about rapid responses. They're often created to deal with the most pressing issues, again, COVID vaccines or other priorities that come up. And they're very much ad hoc opportunities to work on, again, the most pressing government priorities. To me, that sort of opportunity to float around and get involved with pressing and important work is a bit of a draw, and I think it is different to the corporate economy or the economy to other spheres.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've had a secondment as well. I ended up in the Australian Public Service Commission. I was mostly working on integrity and what integrity means to the public service. And that came out of a really key priority for government, which was ensuring the public service, you know, the people that are doing all of the policy work, the casework, the program management, making sure that they demonstrably have integrity in all that they do. Mm. You know, we did a massive review of the public service to make sure that we were still, you know, an A-grade public service compared to the rest of the world and what we could be doing differently or better. And one of those recommendations was go and take a look at integrity, make sure it's really, like, good. Have a, like, develop this really conscious pro-integrity culture, effectively.
Yeah.
And that was something that I got the opportunity to work on, got pulled into that. And that means that I, you know, I've had so much varied experience. It's a whole career in of itself. I'm not limited to just working in one specific, like, in the legal industry. Again, I was like, well, I would have to get very specialist because these are challenging issues and you want to be the kind of person that's go-to about, you know, bankruptcy law and the family law.
Yeah, sure.
Right? But you kind of get stuck in doing bankruptcy law and that's your career, potentially. And so with me, I've got more of a generalist skill set. So long as I'm just doing a good job, I get pulled onto any number of interesting topical issues that I get to make really impactful life change in.
Sure. Okay. Let's go into, I suppose, the practical aspects of someone potentially applying.
Yeah.
For students that are listening, maybe, I don't know, first, second, possibly third year, if you're doing a double degree, earlier on in their degrees, What are some ways they can position what they know about the public sector? I think one of the struggles I had applying to the law firm where I'm potentially going to be working is this idea that it's very difficult to know what's actually happening in the industry, what's sort of top of mind for professionals and what actually happens on the ground, right? Like this idea that we don't know what practically happens. How can students out there build their understanding of public sector work beyond this podcast, but more general?
This is a good way of doing it. It's difficult, but I think it's really honestly the news. Everything that the public service is doing is generally like newsworthy.
Mm.
And so, you know, as we're developing brand new institutions or as we're like having national conversations about how we're going to support people, it always ends up in the news. So I think knowing what the government does is key to being able to address or think about how you're going to pitch why you want to work there, because that's a key part of what you're going to be asked to do when you come to public service. What can you bring? Why do you want to be there? And that why do you want to be there bit is really through having an awareness about what the government is regularly doing and whether you can see yourself supporting that or being able to change it for the better. So I think that's really the key thing that you can do.
I have a follow-up question, but I'm just going to sidetrack for a moment before I forget it. But I think one thing that's different about the application process to a lot of public sector jobs, as opposed to, say, private sector, is that you very much have to explicitly address every selection criteria.
Yeah.
I think in the private sector, you can get away with addressing most of them. And again, I think it's good practice to always address them. But in the public sector, literally, if you don't address one, it cannot be ticked off, then I think that's an automatic out from what I understand.
Yeah, so we've got a very rigid way of doing recruitment, and part of that is because we want to ensure that there's consistency across the board with how we do it, so nothing is unfair. So a lot of the time when you're putting an application forward, people are looking at it going, I would give that answer a 2 out of 5, or I would give that answer a 4 out of 5. I have like reviewed this resume, and on a scale of like 1 to 30, I think this constitutes a 17. It's very specific, and that's how you kind of start distinguishing between whether that person is the right candidate for you versus not. So
are these real numbers? Like a resume rated out of 30, but an answer's out of 5?
I mean, so I think, yeah, that is how you kind of have to do it, because how else do you compare these people in a justifiable way where you can go, like, it's difficult because you want to recruit people that are very capable and skilled, but also like have a connection to them and things. That's why you go through all these different rounds of recruitment where you do, you know, the resume, you write the pitch, and then you go to the actual interview. And then with the grad programs in particular, you do like group tasks, just to see how you play with others. But it's true. So yeah, that's kind of how it all works. It is quite rigid. And so you do have to address all the selection criteria. You need to be very clear with what you're doing, in that, and you have to generally do it where you're demonstrating that, you know, it's been quite conscious, there's good results coming from it, that you've specifically done it, not just broadly the team has done it. Like, there's a lot of things you need to hit for those resumes.
Yeah. So I did mention that I wanted to like follow up on the first issue about knowledge. One thing that I noticed as well, in I think this is across the board here, not just public sector, but there's a general idea that you can be aware of the industry, or you can be, I suppose, competent with your knowledge of the industry, etc. So at least in, say, like the corporate sphere, we have this idea of commercial awareness, right? That's just, we know what's happening. And then I think there's a higher level of understanding where we talk about, let's say, commercial acumen. That's the ability to then apply that knowledge. So for the students that I suppose start paying attention to the news now, hopefully, and looking at what government does, how can they take that critical lens where they start evaluating what's happening, forming their own opinions in a way that can convey, I suppose, that awareness, but also that competence and that skill level when they do happen to go through interviews and potentially group tasks as well, even though playing nice is probably the bigger concern there.
Yeah. I think when it comes to looking at, you know, you're reading the news, you're looking at these things, and you're saying, okay, this is what the government's trying to do. There's a lot of questions you kind of need to ask yourself about why it's happening. So the who, what, when, where, why. Who is this going to be affecting? Does this feel like it's going to be the right thing for them?
Mm-hmm.
Are people in those communities saying that is a problem for them, or they've got more concerns? It's bringing that critical lens of asking, like, what are the risk factors here with how it's happening? Who is this helping, and who is this possibly hindering?
I think, you know what, to be honest, I think we can go back to that policy development cycle that we talked about, and that could be a useful framework, because,
absolutely,
again, like, if we look at the first three stages that we talked about, so, you know, identifying the problem, consulting with stakeholders, and brainstorming solutions, you can probably analyze every policy story that happens in the news by that analysis. Like, what did the government think the problem was? What were they trying to address? Did they, exactly, like, what are stakeholders thinking? What's the consultation happening here? And what other options were there on the table that they might have chosen?
Exactly. And I think a lot of what government does when it's doing consultations and stuff is actually like put that information onto its websites and things. They'll have discussion papers where they're scoping out ideas and they want comments back on it. You know, we do through Parliament a lot of like Senate inquiries into certain topics, and they provide reports where they go, this is the feedback we got from everybody, and this is what we recommend happens from here. So there's quite a lot of transparency in a lot of these things, to the extent that if you start delving or look for it, it's kind of there. And so you can bring those different frameworks in, analyze it yourself, but there's also opportunities to see, oh, what did the stakeholders actually say about this? What are the peak bodies looking at doing? What are they hoping to achieve here? And what do they think is of concern about whatever, like, the blue sky policy idea is? So it's all available there. That reminds me,
like, Monica will plug it while I'm here, but the current office I'm working in works on a lot of this sort of stuff. So the Office of Best Practice Regulation is, I guess, I suppose, like, the assessor of policies when they go through any, the metric in really simple terms is any policy development with a significant impact needs to go through essentially an assessment of all of its impacts done by the OBPR, Office of Best Practice Regulation. Mm-hmm. And all of these are published on the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet's website. I think it's pmc.gov.au/regulation. Chuck the links in the comments/description. But essentially, OBPR releases their assessment of every major policy proposal, and the rate of, you know, satisfactory/adequate is basically like a past good and really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone's ever gotten a really good. So it's basically, they're pretty harsh with their assessment. So it might be a good place to look at in terms of how they grade policy and what is good, considered good policy.
Yeah, and I guess I'll also plug my work at the APSC here. We, you know, when we were looking at what pro-integrity culture meant, we obviously were looking at how we could improve our culture around integrity and being overly being conscious of it. And so we prepared a report that we published on the APSC's website that talks about what we could be doing differently and better and what we heard from stakeholders that we had spoken to. And it's got a quite extensive list at the back about who it was that we spoke to and things like that. So I think there's a lot, there's a lot there that you can find if you're starting to just traverse through these websites and you're getting a better understanding. And, you know, that's really critical when you go into those interviews, particularly at very junior levels. They really want to know that you are somewhat aware of, like, the world around you. Yeah. And they do ask things like, what's an interesting policy issue that you're thinking about and what would you be doing to change it? That means that you'll be able to cover up on those questions really easily because you've thought about it a lot and you know the stakeholders' opinions now. You're going to have a really sophisticated answer to it and you're going to be able to shine compared to everybody else.
You've been put on notice. Like if you get to an interview stage and you don't have an opinion on policy matters, you've been warned here. So
I definitely have an opinion on a policy that the department you're applying for looks at.
Definitely look into Attorney General Department policies if you ever think about it. And you've got this person here interviewing you. But last one here in terms of, I think one concern for me at least is that graduate schemes are ridiculously competitive. And the current job market is in a tragic state. I think the economy is all around quite doom and gloom, right? So one concern I'd have as a uni student at this point is, what happens if I'm interested in policy, but I can't get into one of those graduate positions? What are the alternatives that I can be doing with my time here to make myself more employable, more, I suppose, public sector ready by the time the cycle comes around again the year after?
Yeah, I mean, even whether it's you're looking to get into the grad program or to get any kind of other role within government to do policy, there's a bunch of things that you could be doing through university, that's going to set you up well to be able to demonstrate that you've got the certain skills and criteria that they're looking for at the level that you're looking at. So obviously we've got really standard criteria sets across the public service because we want standardization. So they're looking at a lot of soft skills in particular at that point. So having examples of times when you've worked within teams, where you've overcome challenges where people have disagreed with you, when, you know, you've been asked to do something really quickly and you've been flexible and you've tried to negotiate something that works better for everybody. All those things demonstrate soft skills that people want to see that you've got because so much of what government does is work with stakeholders to ensure that fundamentally everyone is satisfied with what's going to happen to improve the lives of Australians. So good examples are doing things like competitions. I mean, like you and I work together through the competition space to try and better understand. Yeah. We worked well together. It's teamwork. You have to have conversations about how you want to do things. You've got to play nice.
So many plugs happening. I love it.
You've got to play nice. And I think, I don't know, just even things like sitting on little committees and things like that. Government has a lot of committees. We spend a lot of time getting together, having different positions on things, and you negotiate how you want to move forward. So working with people law student associations and things, you learn quite quickly, you know, how you're going to navigate some people's experiences or desires, what they want to see happen to the law students associations.
One thing I think is a good plug here generally is that if you're at uni, right, for a second, I keep saying it, but basically if you haven't graduated, right, you're usually eligible for what are called youth advisory committee positions. And so I think like a lot of councils, local councils, a lot of non-government organizations, etc., have youth consultation through that. They put together groups of young people that they can then consult, essentially, you know, that public consultation thing we talked about, on policies that might affect young people. So that's a good way to get in the head of like policymakers who might be writing these submissions, putting ideas towards government about, and how they go about framing issues and how they consider the views of young people through those positions.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about policy as like a government thing, right? But, you know, every organization has policies about how it wants its employees to work, how it wants some, you know, its universities to work and things like that. So they have to come up with rules and standards of expectations and how they might process certain claims or applications, anything like that. To be able to see the negotiations and inner workings to that extent is really helpful for identifying what developing policy is actually like, even if it's not necessarily, you know, whole of government, you know, implemented for all Australians policy. So I definitely recommend doing things like that. But beyond that, just getting work experience. Like, not enough can be said about the value of having to do even just like bar work and engaging with people that can be challenging, or, you know, having to negotiate or deal with surprising situations you didn't expect. All those ultimately become really good examples for how you demonstrate those soft skills.
Yeah.
So I think getting employment, I know that can be really tough. But those are really great ways of demonstrating that you can actually also be further employable, particularly for government.
I think that's a valuable point, though. I think a lot of people get hung up on the fact that they think they need to have really technical skills for these entry-level jobs. But I think, like you've mentioned a couple of times, you really are looking for those soft skills early on, because I can't speak to policy, but I imagine it's quite similar here, but at least in the legal sector, they basically tell you that all the technical skills you need can be trained into you. They have that expertise there and you can learn it. It's more about those soft skills that they might not be able to hardwire into you.
Yeah.
That is really important.
Yeah. Particularly because soft skills are things you develop over years. They're not something that you can immediately be like, oh, I now understand how to be human. Like, it's one of those things that you grow and you learn as you become a manager. For instance, you start better understanding how people respond to certain ways that you deliver news or information, or how they like to hear it, what platforms they want to be using to communicate with you. Those are all little things that you pick up. The knowledge that that's something that you should be concerned about doesn't come immediately. So you need to spend time growing those things, and the longer you actually have to make mistakes around how to handle situations where somebody's yelling at you, for instance, not to say that the public service has that, but like dealing with challenging people, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna grow over time with it. So once there's an awareness of those things and the ability to handle some of that, government will continue to like work with you to become better and better at the soft skills, but they can definitely teach you the harder skills. There's a lot of processes that are unique to government that you learn because your manager's sitting there going, now you need to send this to this person. They need to consult with you on this. We want to make sure this person's briefed about this, so that they can go and talk to that person. Just really technical stuff, all that can be worked on.
Yeah.
It's mostly just, do you have the soft skills? Can you write legibly?
Can you play nice?
Can you play nice? Cannot be understated. You've got to play nice.
Playing nice is underrated. All right, well, okay, we've got all these soft skills. I think the last thing I might add on that is that if you're pretty keen on working in the policy and / government sphere, some advice I've been given, at least from my team recently, is that you don't need to necessarily fixate on one particular department, because internal movement within the APS is a lot easier than getting into the APS. So if say you're set on working at the Department of Health, don't cut yourself off from applying to things like infrastructure, PMNC, Attorney General's Department, or anything you're eligible for, really, because at that point, like once you're in the public sector, you can move to health at some point if you want. Whereas getting into health from the outside, I imagine, would be a bit harder than within the APS itself.
Yeah. I think there's levels of doors that you've kind of got to open, right? Once you're kind of in the APS, it's far easier to move around because they've already said, oh, yeah, you actually have the skills at this level. You've been deemed an APS 5 or whatever. We can bring you on as an APS 5 in a different agency. because you've got the skills we need that are really specific to the task we're looking at here. So I think
you're a known asset.
Yeah, you're a known asset. You've got the level of capability we think that you need. Here's what we can offer you that's going to grow you differently or better. And here's what we think we're going to gain from you coming into this space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, I didn't get into the Attorney General's graduate program. And I was a lawyer, I was a law student wanting to be doing legal policy work. And it took me obviously a little bit to get into the Attorney General's department, but I'm so glad I went to PNC and worked there and did their grad program. But now I don't feel like I have to be wedded to any one department because they all do such interesting stuff, but there's cross-connected skills. I think that is also something that we often get fixated on, particularly when you're in university, is this idea of wanting to work in a certain subject matter as opposed to finding the types of skills or tasks that you actually really enjoy and that you feel good at and finding those instead and just working on different subject matter.
Yeah.
So that's something that I have learned over time. There's this particular types of work that I really enjoy doing, a lot of that blue sky thinking work. Mm. And so I will move to whatever subject matter it is that's, you know, topical or needs real development or reform and happily plug away at that subject matter and learn and become an expert in that.
Sure, makes sense. Well, you heard it here, guys. Transferable skills help you move around, but don't get fixated on working on a particular subject matter because the APS is so diverse and you do use transferable skills across different subject matters.
Yeah.
Well, with that in mind, okay, let's wrap it up with if people want to learn more about, say, you or they want to connect with you, what sort of things are you working on? How can they get in touch? What's the general vibe here?
Yeah, I mean, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn if you want to talk more specifically about what it is like to do a graduate program or to try and get into the public service. So I think LinkedIn is a really good opportunity to have a chat. And you will see also my report about integrity, which I encourage anyone to read.
Big topics.
It is a big topic and one that I found myself really passionate about having, you know, got into the space. I didn't necessarily ever envision myself as working on integrity, right, as a specific topic, but enjoyed it so much. So, yeah, I think government's great for that. But, yeah, absolutely, feel free to connect to me on LinkedIn, happily have a chat about, you know, what policy is and how it works in more detail if you've got any further questions.
I'll definitely take that up. Like, if you're interested in policy, hit up Bethany. But other than that, thank you so much for coming and thanks for the tea and water and grapes. That said, feel free to reach out, guys. Let me know what you think. Ask me or Bethany any questions, and see you next time.
Thanks.